Barbarian.
And I'm on board as well.
Excellent. I'm Sean Vieira.
And I'm John Connolly.
And this is Andrew Stein.
And we, together, are Excollegiate.
Complete and utter control over everything that goes on the internet.
Hundreds and thousands of people could end up dead.
You just have to be willing to sync to enough levels.
Everyone's favorite Messiah mongerer. It is quite possible that Barack Obama signed up with Alex Chu.
The Libertarian National Socialist Green Party.
Libertarian National Socialist Green Party.
The National Socialist Libertarian Green Party. Yes, so I'll go with that. Yeah, that is my final answer.
Wow. Okay, a special guest today, we have Ryan Ostendorf. Say hello, Ryan.
Hey, guys.
Ryan is Ryan's our friend from Christendom. He went there with us for a number of years, right?
I left at the beginning of junior year.
That's right. Okay.
Because he met a wonderful woman who he is now married to.
Yes, I left. I left a noble cause to an even greater noble cause.
That's awesome.
Today's topic is going to be net neutrality and intellectual property.
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. So, in the interest of making everything interesting, I'm going to start off by stating that I think that government should have complete and utter control over everything that goes on the internet. Just placing that out there as a consideration that really. Whatever you're doing online, you're really doing in the comfort of some nation, and so that nation should have complete. Of course.
Wow, Sean.
Okay, well, Sean. First of all, I would ask you if you were aware that even though we live in this nation. Our government does not really have complete and utter control over anything.
And when they try to have it,
yes,
never works.
Well, this is also true. And, but the question isn't so much whether or not it would be successful. The question is far more. Do they have the authority thereof?
Right.
And
it's not whether it's going to.
Yes, of course they do.
You know, if we're going to talk about practicalities, I mean, that's a whole other subject. I mean, just the idea of policing the internet is something almost ridiculous in terms of logistics. But I mean, we're not even really talking about whether this is going to work or not. We're talking about, you know, should they try. Well, Andrew, it's not that hard.
No, of course not. You just have to be willing to sink to enough levels.
Andrew, might I ask you what you would do if someone put you in charge of eradicating all viruses from the internet?
Well, you don't eradicate the viruses; you use the viruses.
It's a government position. Okay, fine.
You harvest
all of the
them.
Bad viruses.
Person.
All the viruses not listed on a specific government-approved list. What would you do? How'd you stop that?
How do I stop that? Well, it's easy. Make email illegal. That's how they spread. Just get rid of email.
You see, that's exactly the point. To actually effectively police the internet, you have to shut down the internet. Just make networks illegal. Then you'll have complete control over the internet. Mm-hmm. No one will do anything illegal on it.
Exactly.
Well, I kind of agree with Andrew that there is a way to do it, and there on so many levels. You can do it on a software level, you can do it on a hardware level, and of course with hardware there are so many places you can do it as well. You can do it at the home level. You can regulate that there has to be some sort of government regulated router that connects you to your service provider. There could be government regulated backbones. I mean, there's so many ways that you can sniff traffic. It's absolutely ridiculous. But I think the problem is that we're trying to get at that, you know, government has the, whether or not government has the right to do that, and whether or not they can, may they. And I would argue that they may not unless the people will it. You know, because this is a country that should be of the people and for the people. And I agree. Mm-hmm. I mean, I argue that all other countries should be that way as well. But here in the United States, this is what we were founded on. You know, of the people and for the people.
Mm-hmm.
And here we have the government snooping into things that they really shouldn't be. I can guarantee you that there have been some of my phone conversations on the cell phone, yours, everybody's, mm-hmm. that are perfectly innocent, but they've listened in. You know, mm-hmm. it could have been a conversation between me and my wife. It could have been a conversation between me and my lawyer. You know, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And now, I'm not a suspicious guy, so why?
Well, okay, so hang on. I mean, and Ryan makes a good point. And, I mean, I definitely do believe that, you know, the government should be as limited as possible to basically just say, look, take care of the things you need to take care of to ensure the rights and freedoms of the people, and don't go any further. But I don't think it's that easy to just make a broad sweeping, just say, no, government has no place regulating anything on the Internet, or to basically come out in Sean's way and basically say, let's go China's way. you know,
China does a pretty good job.
China does an excellent job of censoring the Internet. You know,
very positive that it works.
Right. Well, in terms of efficiency.
Yeah.
But overall, I think that, you know, you've got to look at this and basically see that there are some ways that the Internet can be used as a tool to break other laws. You know, if there's theft on the Internet, which we know happens, if there's fraud on the Internet, you have to have some governmental access to investigate those crimes on the Internet, if nothing else, for the protection of innocent people on the Internet. But you can't go one step further than that and basically say that we will start just investigating random portions of the Internet without any real reason to do it. I would love to see a sort of cyber search warrant program sort of enacted. You know, you need to have reasonable suspicion that there's something wrong going on, rather than just saying, yeah, we're just going to kind of try to keep an eye on everything.
So, John, in concrete terms, what would the government do to prevent illegal downloading of music and whatnot?
Oh, I don't know if they could do that.
Oh, that's what you're talking about there.
No, not necessarily.
Well,
but hacking into bank accounts is definitely something.
Well, in concrete terms, what is the government going to do to prevent people from hacking into bank accounts?
I don't know. See, I'm not familiar with the technical requirements to actually stop these things.
Okay.
Again, I'm not talking about, you know, can they or can't they. I'm talking about should they or shouldn't they.
Yeah.
And should they or shouldn't they, I definitely think that there should be governmental force to prevent people hacking into bank accounts and things like that. On the other hand, I don't know if it's at all possible to do so. I don't know if the government should even be worrying about things like downloading music. Especially because it's so difficult to actually define what's legal music and what isn't.
Yeah. Well, you see, here's where you run into a whole series of interesting questions as it all comes out. Because, John, you're saying that, you know, on the one hand, it would be a good thing for government to be able to regulate hacking attempts on bank accounts or other kinds of phishing fraud. And, you know, Ryan, you're saying that it would be absolutely wonderful for government to do this, provided that the people endorsed it. But obviously there are certain limits that need to be put in place on this sort of these broad sweeping assumptions. Or are we willing to say at this early venture that, if the people endorse it, anything that the government does is good, or B, you know, that it's quite all right to form some kind of government system to investigate any sort of access across ports, you know, 890 and 170. You know, mm-hmm. because those are, you know, pulling two numbers out of a hat. Those are the two that we'll say in this fictional world are used for secure transactions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, you know, first of all, if you go that way, you limit the possibilities of people. I mean, this is very specific. But if you go that route, you know, you end up with the government limiting a certain way of doing things so that they can monitor that and therefore hampering, you know, movements forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, legitimate movements forward.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's... Well, anyway, go ahead.
No. I was just trying to draw out more. Keep going, by all means. So, I mean...
Well,
oh, go ahead.
Go ahead, John. Go ahead.
All right, here. Look, I don't want to run anyone over here, and I talk way too much on this program as is. But I was just going to say, I don't think Ryan's premise and mine are mutually exclusive. I know we do have the implication sort of that as long as the people will the government to overstep its bounds, it's okay for them to overstep its bounds. I don't think that's what Ryan meant.
No, I don't think so.
You know, that on the whole... basically, if the people choose to allow the government to regulate certain portals for secure transactions, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, especially because they're enforcing, they're basically protecting citizens' transactions that already have legitimate protection under the law as it stands outside of the cyber world. You know, why cannot bank transfers and credit card transfers and things like that, which are protected in the real world from fraud and theft, somehow not under the purview of the protection of law when it's done online.
They are protected under the purview of protection of law online. It's illegal to hack into a computer account. And you don't...
Right.
When they say monitoring the Internet, though, they usually mean monitoring the traffic that goes across the Internet. What you're doing when you're breaking into someone's bank account is you are performing actions on their machines against their will.
Mm-hmm.
It's as if you broke into their house and started moving their furniture around.
Right.
That is, even if you're not monitoring the traffic on the Internet, if you enforce the most network neutrality, the government hands off of the Internet, that's even still illegal because it doesn't even involve the internet necessarily. It's what you're doing on their machine.
Right, and what I'm basically saying is that the government should have every single right to enforce laws already passed and enacted that, you know, online. It should have the ability to enforce those laws online. However, you know, you basically need to... There's certain elements that you need to address where you need to ensure that your laws being passed fit in with your previous corpus of laws. And we can get really, really nitpicky here and start looking at the Constitution and get into all kinds of other things. I don't think we're going to be able to avoid it this afternoon. But, you know, if you really look at it, no laws should be being passed that violate the right to free speech.
Mm-hmm. Precisely.
So
you know,
if people are passing laws that violate the right to free speech, you know, then our premise here that the government should be allowed to enforce its laws online is going to create a whole huge boundary where the government widely oversteps its bounds, largely because of the violation of the Constitution, not because of its ability to enforce its laws online.
Right, I suppose.
You know, I do agree with that, and I think to kind of build on that, it's really what we do have to. You kind of think of it as another medium. I mean, there, you know, telephones are just another medium of getting things done. You know, speaking, or just doing anything by hand. It's just another medium to do things. The only difference with the internet is that it allows more things to be done, you know, in a much simpler fashion. But the mode by which things are done, the, you know, what crimes are actually committed against a person isn't actually that different. Now, sometimes we do have to redefine what's, you know, some social standards. And I think that if you were to flat out say that all of the laws that we currently have, you know, apply flat out, then what you have, in order to accommodate for the means of the internet, you have the government sort of doing this encroaching thing because they have to. It's just, like I said before, it's a very limiting thing. And I think the music industry is a very good example of this. You see these, you know, you see the artists going out and suing their loyal fans, which generally amounts to losing a customer, even for life sometimes. But then you have these other fans that are fully embracing the internet, you know, giving away tracks for free. And here they are, what was it, Smashing Pumpkins, I think. They sold a record amount of records because of these embracing the methods of the internet. You know, and it's just, it's to be rigid in the way that we handle things is, you know, I think that's something that the government likes to do. They tend to be complacent and lazy. And but they tend to be power hungry as well, it does add a whole another level. But it's another thing in this the world and the way that we develop and advance is designed to constantly challenge us, because if we aren't constantly challenged, we're just going to become mush, and people just don't want to be challenged anymore, especially the government.
Well, and, you know, I think, you see, our government has gotten so large that it kind of always gravitates toward the easier. But, you know, be that as it may, I don't think the question, the intellectual property question, especially as pertains to the industry, the question itself has not changed with the advent of the internet. It really has, you know, downloading MP3s is essentially the same question as burning CDs for free, and is the same question as, you know, copying music from audio tapes.
What has changed, John, though? You know, what has changed is the ease.
What has changed, though, is just the number of people.
No, it's changed is the ease in which
it's the number of people
done
who are accessing it.
Previously, the large companies or the recording industry didn't have to worry about these particular technologies, these ability to copy. The ability to copy didn't affect the industry very much. Now that we can copy music, or we can copy software, or we can copy DVDs, or we can copy whatever, it changes the way the record companies have to do business. Because now, whether they like it or not, it's not possible to fully censure piracy. Whether they like it or not, they have to compete with free. And so, in order to compete with free, they've been trying to use certain technologies, pass certain laws to make it illegal, to limit people's ability to present these things for free, and these attempts have largely been unsuccessful. So this is absolutely forcing the record companies and the whole recording industry to change its business model.
Yeah, but ultimately, again, I don't. Okay, so the amount of ease that has changed it. But ultimately, look, if someone's sitting around waiting for a certain song to come up on the radio so he could hit record on his audio tape recorder, was breaking the law then, that crime, as it were, is no different than, you know, someone downloading an MP3.
There is a major difference there. First of all, it's not illegal to record off the radio, and it never was. Third of all, the recording industries have a large amount of control over what is presented on the radio. They actually make deals with the large broadcast companies, and this is why certain songs become very popular, is because the record companies pay the broadcasting companies to play these songs over and over. And by playing these songs over and over, these songs get in the fans' heads, and they go out and they buy those particular CDs. Now, with the spreading online, they don't have this control anymore. Anybody can spread any music on the internet.
Now, of course, you know, in a similar way to the fact that anyone can spread any sort of music online, people can also spread any sort of idea online, and we have in a system where ideas affect change, as our president-elect would have as a slogan, it becomes important to be aware of the ideas that are out there, and, you know, some would argue necessary to censure ideas that are harmful. So, in addition to looking at this, the whole problem of just intellectual property in general, most especially with the music industry that's come up in the past, we should also recall that, you know, another argument for hands-off approach to the internet has to do with freedom of speech in regards to large corporations with governments and so on and so forth.
Sure. The hallmark of a weak idea is its need to censure other ideas. If you need to censure other ideas, your idea is failed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? I believe then the first question that needs to be asked is, has John Stuart Mill's theoretic marketplace of ideas taken on a real form and become the internet? Is the internet the marketplace of ideas? So if it is,
then you
may want to just run it on Mill's premise of let people shop around, you know, for ideas. If you don't like an idea, you don't have to stay at that web page. You don't have to click on that heading on Google. You don't need to. Keep on cruising. You can stay as close to your own ideology or to something you've never even heard of as
John,
you want.
It said Libertarian National Socialist Green Party. I had to click on that link. Absolutely necessary.
Exactly. It was. Oh, I see. It was chemical. You didn't actually get to decide that.
No, that was very definitely.
I was forced.
The National Socialist Libertarian Green Party.
No, it was Libertarian National Socialist Green Party, man.
Yeah, the green swastika. And or. Basically, because here's your big problem. Here's a huge problem. In American society, you know, you have all these people who have access to the internet, all these crackpots who are putting stuff up on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And
the time cube, eternity.
It's to say.
Yes.
Or Alex Chipper.
Yes, or immortality, and I am the calling whipping boy of the Messiah.
It's perfectly fine to say we don't want people subjected to bad ideas, and we want them to mm-hmm. learn good ideas, but you have an enormous problem with deciding who gets to say what's good and what's bad. And I am just not willing to trust the United States government with that job. Actually, I'm not willing to trust any government with that job, no matter how small. Because ultimately, it always devolves down to propaganda versus sedition.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Those are the only two categories that are allowed at that point. Everything that's propaganda, mm-hmm. government-sanctioned, is the good idea, and the people have to learn that.
Mm-hmm.
And anything that is outside of that sphere is immediately labeled sedition, and in some cases, like in China, treason.
Treason. Yeah. So basically, then, what you're arguing, John, is that government has little or should have little or no authority in Mill's marketplace of ideas.
I would not say no, that they don't have any authority. They have the authority to forward as many ideas as they like. They should not be the judge of what's a good idea and what's a bad idea. Because that's exactly, mm-hmm. that when that happens, that destroys the marketplace of ideas. You know, the whole idea for Mill, especially because Mill is such an individualist, is that the power of judgment of these ideas should rest in the individual. And that's why we have democracy. So for Mill, we have democracy as a governmental expression of people and individuals who have exercised their individual authority in the marketplace of ideas. So it's a physical acting out of the beliefs based on the marketplace of ideas. Now, there are a lot of people out there who would basically say, look, I don't trust people to make the right decisions either. but, you know, sometimes you need to rely more on people's common sense and on the ability to convince people than on the ability of a government to force people.
Better to trust a society of free men, though fallen, than to trust a society of a very small and select number of those men who think themselves fittest to rule, judge what truly is right or wrong.
Yeah, I guess so. I'll go with that. Yeah, that is my final answer. You just
alrighty. So then what we have said, more or less, is that in the end, government's responsibility is not to the ordering or the elimination of ideas at all, and so therefore, in that sense, it shouldn't have any authority likewise on the internet for those things. But we have allowed for a certain amount of interaction with the government with various activities on the internet if it regulates them outside of the internet. So, for example, someone engages in grand larceny or engages in fraud. Though they do it on the internet, and though their fraudulent activity, you know, is taking place across the country from where they are, they can still be sued for it. Now, suppose someone who is a United States citizen but living abroad in Spain posts a bunch of seditious material concerning the United States on a Norwegian-hosted bulletin board.
Where else?
Where else, indeed.
No, really, where
and
else?
And then returns to the States. He has not acted on this in any way while in the United States. His only seditious activity has been to post seditious materials,
right,
which can be viewed in the United States.
What on earth are seditious materials that could be posted to the internet? What, saying that you hate the United States?
Sean, you have the right
president?
To go around on our streets telling folks that you want to overthrow the United States. It's perfectly legal here, and so it's perfectly legal to do so in another country.
Yeah, I don't think Spain or Norway are actually going to complain too much about seditious material. But no, what did you have in mind when you said seditious material?
When I said seditious material, I was thinking something along the lines of explanations as to why we need to have a violent overthrow of the current regime and remove the constitution and replace it with some new creation.
Well, I'm already
doing that. Plans for treason, but not active plans for treason. All right.
See, I'm not even sure that's... I'm very vague on whether or not sedition is actually a crime in the United States.
Oh, it is. It is. It's not a regularly enforced crime. But seditious and treasonous activity
is one thing, but seditious words?
That's the principal way in which one is vicious.
Well, and that's, again, it's so nebulous compared to the right to free speech, which is pretty solidly defined and has a huge corpus of law to base it on, a huge amount of precedent in the court system that, I mean, I'm not exactly sure where the differentiating principle is. On the whole,
sedition.
Oh, that's awesome. Somebody write that down.
Sedition. Sorry.
Yes,
Barack Obama the musical.
Yes, indeed.
Let's back out a little bit here and say, let's look at freedom of speech rights and sedition.
Yes.
I would argue, based on the intent of the Founding Fathers, that the freedom of speech principle trumps the sedition principle, primarily because of the duty of United States citizens to rise up and overthrow a tyrant should he arise. To do so, you would need to engage in active sedition to the government.
Yes, you would. You see, this is where it gets interesting, John. In the United States system, you have two different things going on. If someone is acting seditiously against the legitimate government, all right, then they're plotting to overthrow it for reasons which are not good. First, which are not good principles, all right? Acting contrary to the principles of the fathers, then their activity would be seditious. However, if you have a government acting contrary to the principles of the founders, all right, or at least this is what I argue, then, in point of fact, the government is acting treasonously. Those people who are in the government have ceased to be governors and have become criminals?
No. See, the problem, Sean, is still the same.
Who decides
what is treason, what is sedition? Treason, by its very nature, is any act of betrayal against your government.
Yes.
Not just, you can't remain true to the government while overthrowing the government. Sedition,
interestingly
same thing.
Enough.
Acting to foment uprising against your government.
Yes.
And so basically, any act of sedition against the United States government, any act of treason, going to be defined by those you are trying to overthrow. If there's a legitimate recognition in the Founding Fathers for a little revolution now and then, then by that principle, you've got some wiggle room on the sedition thing, whereas you don't on the freedom of speech.
And
all right,
I'm gonna
jump in here, if I may.
Well, first of all, you're not allowed.
First of all, Andrew sent me this link here, the Libertarian National Socialist Green Party. I was just clicking around on the site, and I noticed that there was the Nationalist Party of the United States of America, and I clicked on it, and lo and behold, error 404 not found. You know what that means? that even writing of seditious writing is apparently not allowed here in the United States.
Dude.
Well, either that or they ran out of funding to pay for their server.
I'm betting it's the latter. I'm betting, considering kind of groups that put up these weird left field things, none of them can ever keep their stuff up. I mean, if you go to the Christian National Christian Phalangist Party, they're up.
Oh, them. Yeah. Try looking up them. The Christian Phalangist Party.
Or how about the Pirate Party of America?
Do we have a Pirate Party?
Yeah. And,
we do.
Do we have
never,
a Ninja
that,
Party?
The website never seems to stay up.
Oh, I'll believe you that one.
Yeah, and, well, I have a feeling that even if they, it could just be that the government decided to take it down, and I also believe that it could be that the government decided to eliminate their funds. And it's certainly possible. I wouldn't put it past the government to do that. And that's not why I interrupted. Actually, the reason why I interrupted it's kind of tying back to previously, but also in addition, You know, I think overall the government really doesn't have the right to decide if something is seditious or treasonous against them. The government is not for its own sake. The government should not be there to protect itself. It should be there to protect the people. So if treason is something that's affecting the people, great, get rid of it. Unfortunately, it's kind of a catch-22. You know, the government does need to be able to take action against treason or something seditious.
Yes.
But on the same token, we can't necessarily trust the government because politicians, government in general, tend to act on their own behalf. It's a bit controversial, but I would argue that the government generally doesn't have the right to treat something as treasonous if it's only against the U.S. government.
Well, and that's why you can't legitimately let the government investigate that sort of thing on the internet because the government has this self-interest in preserving itself, and the vast amount of our government is there for self-proliferation purposes. I think that it's ultimately going to lead to anyone criticizing the government is watched that much more closely. And after a while, it's not that difficult to envision the government just shutting down anyone who starts getting critical of the government.
Yes. All right.
And at that point, it becomes much more difficult to actually have a democracy.
It becomes impossible, an actual point of fact.
Yes.
Well,
it
won't
to have a democracy
possible.
In its tyranny.
Or
an oligarchy.
It's not impossible once the government starts censoring the internet. But when the government starts censoring the internet, it's not going to be too far behind to start censoring the newspapers, the magazines, and the books.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Or when it starts, or when the people start censoring it on their own, as in Fahrenheit 451, or in any good demos, where the authority of the great number encourages some error. Yeah. It's possible across the board, any form of government whatsoever, for suppression of ideas to be carried out with great force violence. I think we're making a little bit of a mistake here when we say that the government as such doesn't have the right to determine what is treasonous or what is harmful against the government. As if there was two separate kinds of treason, one which attacked the government and the other which attacked the people.
Well, that's not what I'm saying.
I would argue...
All I'm simply saying is that I think there's really only one type of treason, and that is anything that, would harm the people. My own people. Obviously if it's a majority, it's not going to be treason. the government does have to be flexible in that matter, but I think it's a matter of understanding what the true sense of treason is.
Okay. Alrighty. So, draw that out a little more. What would be can you commit a truly seditious or treasonous act simply through the propagation of ideas?
I do not think so.
Can you have an idea which is so harmful to society?
I don't think that you can take a legal basis for stopping someone from thinking what they think or telling other people what they think.
Yeah, if the people don't agree with it, or we have to trust ourselves in a certain sense. People tend to have on a large scale, they tend to understand what should and shouldn't be done. And for the most part, if there's some little radical group, the people either aren't going to listen to it or they're going to try to, smother it out themselves, and they're just going to wither away because it's stupid, it's pointless, and they know it's harmful. So in that sense, there really isn't any need for government action, you know. And besides, it, I mean, it is a matter of free speech. So if this guy thinks the government's stupid, and he thinks that they should all be shot in the head, let him think that. You know, he'll take it to his grave. But there's nothing wrong with that.
Jihadis have the right to free speech, too.
Well, let's take a look at a concrete historical example of something that everyone here would probably agree was a bad idea that changed the course of history and a lot of people ended up adhering to. Let's look at Karl Marx.
Yes. You're talking about, that was a great idea. Karl Marx is a great idea.
Well, he was the idea of God, so...
Marxism, basically, it's this idea, it catches wildfire, it spreads like mad, it's still throttling our civilization today. Government isn't the right tool to try and stop it. It just isn't. Because if you have government, even a government that is as anti-Marxist as possible, which would... You basically have a situation where no matter what you do, you're not going to stop those people from thinking what they think.
Well,
it can't be done.
Well, the most effective
you can kill all those people, you can throw all those people in jail, but you don't stop the idea. As a matter of fact, persecuting it in some instances makes it fan the flame.
Stronger.
The Russians were the strongest persecutors of the Marxists until the Russian Revolution. So it is quite telling. You know, Marxists took over where they were most persecuted.
But if you're not,
their ideas could be used.
Yes.
If you're not out there, if the people themselves are not trying, if good people who have good ideas are not out there even trying to convince people otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Bringing down the heavy hand of the law isn't going to change very much. It's not going to solve your problem. So insofar as that goes, I don't care what people are saying in the YouTube comments, I don't care what people are saying on forums and message boards, or even what the Libertarian National Socialist Green Party is saying on its website. I just don't think that government's the right tool to stop those people from thinking what they think and saying what they say.
So what you're positing instead is that it is a responsible citizenry, which is duty bound to engage ideas as they come upon the stage of the consciousness of more than one individual, and to encourage or to dismiss those ideas as such in attempts to guide the course of their family, their town, their city, their county, their state,
exactly,
their nation, their world.
And you'll find it time and time again throughout history. Look at the French Revolution. The persecuted Catholics for a long time in France refused to even bother going to actually engage and debate the new society that emerged from that. And whether or not you think the French Revolution is a good thing or a bad thing, you know, it wasn't until the 1830s, really, that Catholics basically came back onto the intellectual scene in France. Not because there had been so much widespread prejudice against them, I mean, that was there, but they didn't want to. They refused to. They thought, you know, it's just a lost cause. We need to just wait for the kings to come back. And several times, they reinstalled the Bourbon legacy, and each time it didn't work because people weren't even bothering to try and engage the culture. They weren't even bothering to try and change people's minds. It wasn't until Blessed Friedrich Ozanam basically came to prominence in the Sorbonne that, you know, he basically came to a lot of the Catholic intellectuals and said, look, you need to stop being hermits, and we need to actually start working and living in this world, even if we don't like it. You know, it's our duty to still evangelize. And, you know, it's the exact same principle over and over.
Now, John, I have a question for you. It's for anyone here, because we've all agreed that we don't like censorship on the Internet. But let me pause at a scenario. Let's say we have these jihadis. They have this website, or they have this thing. And they're using the Internet to communicate, but not communicate through propaganda, not propagandize, but using it to communicate actual tactics. Now, they're using an encryption or something, so we can't actually read what they're talking about, so we can't use it to stop them. But we could, in theory, cut off their communication by censoring this particular aspect of the Internet, and therefore restrict their ability to cooperate their efforts to blow up the Sears Tower or whatnot, what have you. Now, would this be
We could also take a, you know, it's similar to the, you know, to the Germans in the Enigma, and just determining what that, you know, what that key was. It's basically like using the radio to communicate, you know, in a sort of encrypted manner. You know, in terms of interrupting them, I think that if there's reasonable belief that, and obviously there has to be reasonable belief. But if there is, that, you know, they're going to hurt, you know, blow some people up, innocent people, then obviously it's, you know, well, if they're going to be a terrorist organization, they're going to be probably blowing anybody up anyway. So, but yeah, I think then in that case, it's something that, you know, they should have the ability to even cut them off, because within the country, I think that's a reasonable expectation.
I don't know. I'm still very uncomfortable allowing that, you know, to basically say, yeah, that's cool, that's fine. Ultimately,
even the principles that we've articulated.
Ultimately, you know, this country has massive, massive holes in its national security, in my opinion, and essentially, what this country so far has been relying on to prevent another terrorist attack is knowing where they're coming beforehand. Whereas if we actually defended what was ours and actually secured our ports and borders, that wouldn't be as much of an issue. I just think there are other ways you can go about doing it, ways that, you know, don't, even if they don't cross the line, they nestle up really close to it. I think that would be a little bit more freaky.
You know, I think I do agree with that, but I think I should clarify that I'm talking more ideologically, that if we had a you know, a government that wasn't so hasn't gotten so far away from its founding truths, that, you know, that would be an appropriate situation. I think that in the current situation that we are in, John, I fully agree with you.
Right. Well, I mean, if we had a government that hadn't gotten so far away from its founding truths, we wouldn't need to have military controlling our borders, even, because the entire country would be filled with Minutemen.
Thank you, John.
Militia would end up defending us against any terror attack that came. No one would even bother trying to come in and take advantage of the fat, you know, lazy, complacent masses who have an innate psychological fear of guns and weaponry, who have no clue as to how to take care of themselves or defend themselves. If that were not the case, if we had a government that was true to its founding principles, first of all, this wouldn't even be a question that came up. Second of all, terror would be being fought here on this soil, and no one would be able to get in or out of the Sears Tower, because everyone would have the guns to stop them, you know?
You know what, I think we actually are going to be running into an issue with that in the coming regime.
Yes.
Quite probably, yes.
Yeah.
I think.
But in the wrong way.
Yeah, and I don't think the government has been on a course toward its founding principles for the past 100 years or so.
Yeah,
I think that's a good.
Yeah,
I believe it on Andrew Jackson.
You know, I think that things would still be easy enough to correct if it weren't for Woodrow Wilson.
Possibly. Quite possibly. It's interesting, though, that both you and Ryan brought up a very, very interesting concept, which I'd like to pursue a little bit before we wrap up today, although I think it's something that could be a podcast in its own. You said, given the state of the United States governing body today in relation to the first principles on which this government was founded, their actions being so far separate from these first principles, their authority should be, and is, severely limited because of their lack of understanding of these principles, seeming to imply at the same time that if you had a government that was far closer to an understanding of its first principles, they would be able to operate better and almost as if they had a broader scope. Am I correct in this?
No.
Or am I...
There's no differentiation being made here. There's only one founding principles. The founding principles themselves stipulate a limited government. And insofar as the government today has departed from those founding principles in overstepping its bounds, what I advocate is a return to the bounds as intended and as originally stipulated.
All right.
Basically, you know, what I'm saying is that anything further beyond those bounds is illegitimate. And it's not actually authority. It's just power.
Excellent.
So I'm not basically
clarification.
Yeah, that's where I'm coming from there.
Yeah. And that in overstepping those bounds, then you're not actually exercising.
Well, in overstepping those bounds, you may be exercising your authority, but you're abusing it.
Yes.
So it's you're exercising it sometimes in an illegitimate way. There are some areas where the government regulates that it just does not have any excuse. No, there's no way that it could have any legitimate reason to exercise that. But there are other ways that it exercises where it's overstepping that bound. It's not illegitimate, but it is definitely an abuse. It's definitely a problematic element there. And so what do you have? You have the government as it was in its inception. You know, what it should be. The government as it is now, you have to continually try to prod the government back to where it should be, but at the same time, you can't just do nothing until the government gets there. So that's where Ryan's argument comes in, who basically says, look, as things stand right now, you know, we need to allow this for our protection, knowing that the government won't even allow us the basic right to bear arms. We need to basically allow the government to work the system that it's created, basically, until such time as we can start to move back toward our founding principles. I don't think I'd agree with that. Myself, I don't think that because the government has overstepped one bound, we should let them overstep another. You know, they've already walked all over the Second Amendment. I don't want to see them walking all over the First. But at the same point, I don't have any good. No, I don't mean that's what you meant, but but at the same point, I don't have any good answer to Andrew's problem. You know, I see the problem, I can understand how, you know, the government's opened the hole, and now we need some way to close it, which the government has not allowed the legitimate means to close it, so I don't have an answer, and in my solution to just let them alone, hundreds and thousands of people could end up dead. That's a huge problem from my aspect as well.
You know what my solution is?
What?
Blank slate.
What?
I don't think you can make... All right, this country being made into a tabula rasa.
Oh, start again?
Were you planning on, like nuclear or chemical?
Oh, no. Not that... Not that kind of
tabula rasa.
I think just bring it back to the, of the people actually it's constantly my boss, come in, especially after Obama was elected. He likes to say it's time for an armed rebellion.
I'm not the only one who thinks so.
I don't know about that. We do need some kind of revolution. You know.
Yeah, and maybe not armed, but well, certainly people need to start caring more. And you know, I think in a lot of ways this past election was really good because we started to see some more people, you know, stand up and say what they really believe.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we also had some of the masses that fell into an unthinking pattern, and they kept with it and decided to vote according to emotion. I don't know if you guys saw what's his name, Howard Stern's little experiment in New York.
I saw it. Yeah, I did.
Which one was that?
Yeah.
They went to all the voters in New York, mm-hmm. and they started asking them, oh, so you're going to vote for Obama, and everyone was like, yeah, we're voting for Obama, and they're like, so you don't, you know that he's completely and totally pro-life, right, that he'll abolish abortion. They're like, yeah, I could live with him being pro-life. They're like, oh, yeah, and you know that, like, you know, Sarah Palin's going to be the vice president if he's elected. You're okay with that. They're like, yeah, we're still going to vote for Obama.
Oh, that's great.
Wow.
Yeah. Hey, we should...
You see, but that's another podcast right there that we've already mm-hmm. considered. But you know, it's not enough to care and vote, and it's not enough mm-hmm. to care and vote compassionately.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's an entire culture out there that needs to be addressed and needs to be educated with actual moral principles. If nothing else, with actual and real ethical principles. Something that mm-hmm. is completely gone. Our culture is a very compassionate culture. Our culture is a culture that does care a lot. And that's why you see, you know, unprecedented numbers of young people going to vote, and you see large numbers of young people getting involved in churches, in charities, in activism. Mm-hmm. But it's not enough, because unless you have those formational things, you're going to go off in the wrong direction. And if you start in the wrong direction, you're going to end off the cliff. And that's exactly what's going on. So until, you know, the people who actually have the answers crawl out of their holes and actually go and address this, things aren't going to get any better. They're only going to get worse, because the activism is going to grow, and that is going to be channeled into all the wrong areas. The good is going to be subverted to the bad.
Mm-hmm.
Aye, very much so. Hmm. Is why, in the end, the truth can argue for no limits on the speaking of truths, because it can be guaranteed that all other truths will, in the end, pass and fade, no matter how many times they raise their heads, and the best way to engage that, to deal with the problems of bad ideas, is to let them meet head on good ideas. But ideas are only embodied in persons, and the only way for good ideas to battle bad ideas is for people like ourselves to go out and actually speak them and act them and live them.
Well,
or actually teach them in the family.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But, you know, and that's something else, too. I mean, you can always... I mean, essentially, the entire story of our culture, of what needs to be done with our culture, can be summed up in the phrase, you know, I think it was St. Francis, preach the gospel constantly, when necessary, use words. but... even further, I mean, if you want to get back to the marketplace of ideas, that's not an unqualified freedom to just pick and choose ideas. Relativism mm-hmm. needs to be overcome. The marketplace of ideas only works in its own little ideal, in its own little theory, if mm-hmm. people actually care about what is the truth, if people are actually in search of the truth. If we have enough people out there in search of the truth, then things will work in the marketplace of ideas. People will be looking for the truth. But most people today don't know what the truth is. They don't have mm-hmm. any concept of the truth. And even when they do, there's this kind of slimy little, you know, spineless idea of Well, even if I think this is true, it doesn't necessarily have to be true for anyone else.
Well, John, you know, it's truth not doesn't put food on the table. Truth doesn't buy me a big screen TV. What's more important?
Exactly.
A big screen TV. I want a big screen TV.
Right. And so until people are able to see beyond that, you know, until people are actually able to understand, you know, what it's about, what the ideas are about, not about utopia, not about being nice, but about you know, the truth and the ends of man. Until that happens, you know, nothing is going to get any better.
That's eschatology.
For that, we have Alex Chu, who will...
Golly.
Alex Chu knows the end of man.
Yes. He also knows the Messiah who will lead us to the end of man.
Well, he doesn't know the Messiah. The Messiah has not arrived for the job yet.
Oh, that's right. Sorry.
He has
the calling cards for the Messiah.
That's right.
He has
I'm going
to
ring...
cards for the Messiah.
You know what? I'm going to ring the gong every time I hear Alex Chu's name.
Alex Chu.
I am.
Alex Chu.
Yes, everyone's favorite Messiah mongerer.
Yes, indeed.
Do not look up that website, people.
It will hurt your eyes.
What is this? Gorgeous pill?
I love that
one. Yes. We have photoshopped images of him getting younger.
Yes, there are many, many, many wonder things here.
He put out a want ad for to fulfill the position of Messiah. He was going to hire someone to be the Messiah.
Yes. It gets far, far worse.
Super.
Like,
but if we started censoring the internet, we wouldn't have gems like Alex Chu for endless hours of entertainment. We wouldn't have anything about the Time Cube.
Oh, my word.
What is it like in the future? Well, Alex Chu's new Darwinism.
So how much does a full-time savior pay?
Nothing. He doesn't pay you a thing. You just get to be the savior.
Like you get to be the savior and have millions of people adore you.
Yes.
Being the savior requires having lots of money in the first place. Alex Chu, the savior, will be very rich.
Yes.
Actually, I would argue that the salary of the savior is $400,000. Is that what it's up to now?
Gotcha.
You know, we have already posited this. It is quite possible that Barack Obama signed up with Alex Chu.
Hey, Sean, remember when Barack Obama was having the rally 2 blocks from here? Remember we're gonna go down. We're gonna get a big old sign that says Christos, like Barack Obama is the Messiah. we were afraid it might go over folks' head.
are
awful.
Oh, that's
no. It depends. Yeah, in Manassas, it's true.
Yeah.
You go to Alexandria, you'd be fitting right in there.
Mm-hmm. Oh yes, very much so. Oh no, we would have. Given the story of what happened in New York, we might well have had a whole lot of, you know, thumbs up, man. Because apparently, one of the greatest insulators against sarcasm is rank stupidity.
True. It's absolutely true.
You have to understand statement before you can take umbrage at it. And only after you take umbrage at it can you realize that it's not meant seriously. Actually consider it. But that there is a whole another ball of wax, a whole other problem for a whole another podcast or a whole another life. Given that you have to reach out to a vast number of people and to bring the truth to them to enable democracy and republic to function, how do you deal with the problem of having not massive numbers of evil people, but massive numbers of stupid people?
The first thing you have to do is stop sending them through the stupid public school systems so that we stop making them stupid.
Public school system is a violation of freedom of thought.
And it's very easy for people to look around and say, let's blame the public school system. You know, The system itself is a product of not only the desires of government, but the parents as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's lamentable, but people are making their children stupid. And it's been going on for so long now.
Mm-hmm.
It's been going on for so long now that after a while, you have parents raising their children up stupid, and then those stupid kids going out and having kids, and the problem just gets worse. So I'm not surprised that you know, something like 90% of Americans, as of February, could name you every single finalist on American Idol, but they couldn't name you even three people who were on the primaries.
Wow.
Wow. Oh,
you know?
Yikes. Yeah.
This is, first of all,
these are horrible.
System.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the first problem. Second of all, you know, something has got to be done about the woeful prevalence of television in this country. Because I'm of the opinion that the prevalence of television in your life is directly influential on the number of brain cells in use.
Or it's inversely proportional.
And
possibly.
And third, I wouldn't say inversely proportional, but
yeah.
Third is that you know, people need to start to learn to think on their own.
Yes.
You know, you can't just believe everything ABC tells you. You can't believe you definitely can't believe everything Fox News tells you. Because Fox News, they'll get the facts right, but the context will be so overlaid with sensationalism that you'll get the wrong idea.
Yes.
You know, so you have basically tons of family issues and tons of information control issues. So this needs to be addressed in the media. This needs to be addressed in the government. This needs to be addressed in the family.
Mm-hmm.
And until, you know, all three need to start, you know, backtracking away from its fast-paced, nonstop, you know, sort of blathering entertainment scope before people are going to actually stop being the consumer of that.
That's true.
Yeah, if we fundamentally changed, if we changed nothing else but the family, you know, and that's why it's important that we do it now.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, because if we, even if we do it and do nothing else, we are doing a great service to our country, to our children, and to future generations by making sure ideas, and they can pass it on to their children, and eventually it'll grow up properly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, by teaching that kind of thing in your family, especially to young kids. Kids are not afraid of diddly squat. If you teach them that you know, that this is wrong, they'll go out and they see somebody doing something wrong, they're gonna say, that's stupid and that's wrong. And you know, they can be 10 feet taller than they are, you know? It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to a large extent that's what we're doing right now. You know, we've all been raised with certain ideas, you know, and we're taking these out. And that's always got to be the mission. You know, there's that, what Ryan just laid out is the correct mechanism. But the mechanism comes with a very, very dangerous element. And that danger is always that it's going to turn off and become a closed circuit.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, you have lots of kids and teach them all the right things, and that they're just going to hunker down and stay away from everything else. You know, you want it to, you want people to go out and maybe not be doing like door-to-door work, you know, maybe not standing in the streets shouting, but to at least, like, when you go to your job and, you know, when you come into contact with people, you know, when you're going about
always
your
be ready to give
sphere,
an explanation for the joy which is in you.
Well, yeah, you know, to be able to live your beliefs.
Yes, utterly and completely.
So maybe ideas is the wrong word. Maybe habits is a better word.
Not habits. That's an entirely different connotation than what we're looking for, I think. I think idea is right, but, it has to be an idea that's lived. And
yes.
It has to be an idea that is not just foundational, but formational.
Mm-hmm. One which forms habits, not necessarily.
If you want to say, it's not so much a problem of having good or bad habits.
Yeah.
It's a problem of having good or bad formation.
Okay.
So the problems that beset modern culture, the problems that beset the United States today and the youth of today are not, they're not habitual problems. They're not, the problems out there aren't that people have very bad habits. The problem out there is that people have very, very awful formation.
John, I would argue that a formation is leads to habits.
It will lead to habits, that's right. But it's something entirely different from habits.
I'm not sure about that in its fullness. You're speaking of this habit of having ideas that then affect your life, of thinking one thing and then doing the same. Yeah, and I think in the end that is truly something which has to become habitual. When you see the truth, you act on it. Yeah. It's habit is something far more than simply, whether or not you have a beer with dinner. Habit is and the direction of the will upon the operation of that appetite. You know. So that sort of formation, you have no ideas at all.
I see, that's the thing is, if you have no ideas at all and only habits, how are you doing something virtuous? You know, you want to talk philosophy, we can talk philosophy, but it's not virtue if it's just habit.
Exactly.
But, so by that same token, we may be getting into a chicken-egg sort of thing here, but I do think that formation is separate from the habit. Habits may rise from formation. But that the formation is more important. Because the formation always gives you the option to get back to it. Even if you've got the wrong habits at the time you get that formation, you can work on that. The habits are always secondary, but the formation is tantamount.
Yeah, the habits and action always come after. They are based on, first principles. Basically, those are most things that everybody understands. Everybody understands there's gravity. So they act accordingly. Everybody understands that if you run at a wall, you're going to probably knock yourself out. Everybody understands that. And because it's a first principle, and their parents teach them that. And it's so we work on truths and things that we know are true. Sometimes it simply comes down to rote, teaching of what these things are. I mean, it's just kind of like learning to type on a keyboard. The first time, you're probably going to be hunting back, and that's simply it. But the more you get at it, you do form that habit. But you first have to find your moorings on that keyboard. You have to find your bearings. And until you understand the alphabet, then you have no bearings.
Oh, curse you, Dvorak. Curse you.
Even further, you have to have a reason to learn how to type before you learn how to. You can learn how to type. You can. But if you have absolutely no reason, if you have no reason to do that, you can learn all the habits to use how to type, but you are never going to actually use them right.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Son wants to say hi.
Hello.
Well, by all means.
Hello.
He doesn't feel like talking right now.
Okay.
He just feels like grabbing a microphone.
How old is he now?
Sorry.
He's 7.5 months.
Wow. Oh my.
I was going to say, 7.5 years? Man. A long time. Wow.
Like, wow, I've been out of school a long time.
Yes, indeed. Oh, my. Well,
yeah.
That's yeah. I think we've covered some very good ground here tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah. At this point tonight, I think we have a lot of stuff yet that we can put into many more discussions.
And we want to kill the recordings.
To come. Yeah. I think. All right. Well, signing off for this week. I'm Sean Vera.
This is Andrew Stein.
And I'm John Connolly.
And we together are Twitch
Allegiance.